Okay, we can start right after we have the party, so the sooner we start, the sooner we finish. My name is Matteo Pagani, and I'm from Italy. I work in Microsoft in a worldwide team called App Consult, which is a mix of support and evangelism regarding Windows development. And I have three speeches in this couple of days, talking about various topics connected to Windows 10 development. And the first one today is about the life of a universal Windows app. What does it mean, life of a universal Windows app? As you know, the mobile and the apps approach is different from the old traditional desktop approach. So there is the requirement to handle the life cycle of an application in a different way than in the past. So we'll see how Windows 10 is able to handle this process. And in the middle, we'll see some other topics which are connected to the life cycle, which are background tasks, which are the answer to the question, how can I execute operation when the app is not running? And a new concept that has been added in Windows 10, which is the concept of app services, which is a way to handle the communication between different apps installed on the same device. So why there's the requirement to handle the application lifecycle in a different way? Because probably the most important new features that have been added in Windows 10 is that we are not talking anymore about an application that runs on a phone or just on one family of devices. So I have one application that is specific for the phone, one application that is specific for the PC. Now we have the same application that is running across different devices, different screens, different ways of interact with the device. So we need to handle that the application, yes, can run on a very powerful device like a traditional desktop computer, but it can run also on a device like a smartphone, which maybe is not as powerful as our PC, and it's not always connected to a power source. So we need, for example, to keep in mind the battery life of the device. With the old traditional approach in Windows desktop application, just think about Visual Studio, Office, every Photoshop, it's the user that controls the lifetime of the application, meaning that the application starts to run when the user launches the application, and until the user closes the application, the app is still running. It's the user that decides when he wants to start using the app and when he wants to stop using the app. If you minimize, for example, an application, Office or Visual Studio, the app is still running. If you launch a build operation on Visual Studio and you minimize it, the build keeps running. In the universal Windows app ecosystem, instead, it's the user that controls the lifetime, but with the help of the operating system, meaning that the operating system has a way to decide when the app can run on or needs to be terminated based on some conditions, like, for example, low resources, memory pressure, low space on disk, and stuff, and other conditions like that. So what happens for a universal Windows app on Windows 10, if you have already worked with Windows Phone or Windows 8.1, this is the same concept, so nothing has changed from this point of view. Basically, the user is playing with an app, is using an application, and the app is running. At some point, he decides to move to another application. The previous app is suspended. And so on, another application, another app running, the old app is suspended. At some point, when the application is suspended, what happens is that it's using memory, because the state of the application is preserved in memory. The advantage of this approach is that when the user decides to go back to an application, it's instant, because basically it's just like if the process was frozen and then it's unfrozen. So since the application are using memory, it can happen, especially on a device with low memory like a smartphone, that at some point you don't have enough memory to launch other application. In this case, the operating system is able to start terminating the old application to reserve memory for the newer application. The goal of this approach is to keep all the resources available for the running application, to avoid that a suspended application is able to steal resources from the active application. Thanks to this suspended state, where the process is kept in memory, you are able to get an instant resume experience when you decide to go back to a previous application. What happens when the application is suspended? As I said, the goal of the suspension is to keep all the system resources focused on the running application. So that, for example, if I'm running a game, the game is running at maximum speed because all the CPU is available for the game. It's not used for doing something else. As such, suspended application doesn't have any impact on battery life or on the speedness of the application that is running, because they are not stealing resources from the running application. And you have this instant switching experience because the process is in memory. It's just frozen and unfrozen, so you don't have to recreate the instance of the application every time. On the phone, it's pretty simple to understand when the app is suspended. When you press the start button, or for example, you tap on a toast notification, you open another app and the other one gets hidden. This is the suspension. On the desktop, when you have the concept that you can have multiple applications open at the same time, suspension happens when you minimize the application. So when you tap on the minimize button and it gets hidden in the taskbar, in this case, the app, after a short period of time, gets suspended. Under the hood, what happens to an application when it's suspended? Suspended apps are not scheduled, meaning that they don't have any chance to use the CPU, to use disk, or to use network access. So an application that is suspended, it's not able to perform any kind of background operation. Everything is suspended. The only resource that it's using is memory, because they are kept in memory. Termination, instead, is the other status, which happens when the system is running in low resources. So the system is more memory, the application is terminated. The process is terminated, and as such, it's not using any more memory. Of course, in this case, you don't have the instant resuming experience, because if the user decides to go back to your application, he needs to start the application from scratch. It's up to the developers to handle the saving and loading the state of the application in order to give to the user the impression that the app has never been closed. So what I expect is to go back to do exactly what I was doing when I suspended the application. In case of suspension, you don't have to do anything special because the process is still in memory. In case of termination, instead, it's up to the developer to start worrying about saving and restoring the suspension. To handle this experience, you have a set of events that you can subscribe in the app.xaml.cs file. The app class is the class that takes care of initializing everything for the application. It lives with the application, so as soon as the application is running, the app class is alive and is able to answer to the various events. Some of these events are connected to this life cycle. So you have events to detect when the application is being launched, when the application is being suspended, and so on. This is the typical approach that you use when you need to handle the state. The on-suspending event is triggered when the application gets suspended, and typically it's the event where you save the state of the application. Why saving the state? Because, as a reminder here, the applications do not get notified when they are being terminated. So you need to save the state during the suspension because you can't know before if your app will be terminated or not. Since you don't know in advance, you need to do it. If the app will always be resumed from a suspension, simply the state will be ignored. In case of termination, instead, it's up to you to reload the state you have saved. You have also this resuming event, which in some cases it can be confusing because you can think, ah, okay, I need to use this event to load my data, my state. No, because the onResuming event is triggered only when the application is resumed from a suspension, which means that the state is already there. You don't have to reload it. Resuming is rarely used. It can be useful only when you want an easy way, for example, to refresh the data of your application. Since the suspension is connected to resources and not to timing, it can happen that the user decides to reopen your news application after 3 hours. And in this case, you may decide that in three hours it's a long period of time, so it's better to refresh the content of my application because it may have changed in this time frame. So when and how you can handle the saving and restoring of the state? One important thing to understand and to remind is that there's a big difference between the date, the data of the application, and the state of the application. The data of the application is everything that is needed by your application to run and to display information to the user. For example, content generated by the user or a database. This kind of information needs to be saved as soon as possible. You don't have to wait that the app is being suspended. For example, let's say that you have an application to track movies. You want to add a new movie, you fill all the information about the new movie, and then you press save. When you press save, you have to immediately save this new movie into your database. You don't have to wait, because otherwise, if you decide to do that only during the suspension, it can happen that your application may crash for a bug or for an operating system problem, and since you haven't saved the data immediately, the data is lost. You don't have any way to recover it. So, when it comes to user data, you need to save it incrementally, as soon as you can. What you need to save when the app is suspended is instead the state of the application. The state of the application is everything that is needed to give to the user the impression that the app has never been closed. So, let's get back to the example of the movies app. Let's say that the user is filling the data about the movie. He hasn't pressed the save button yet, but he receives a message on WhatsApp and he wants to reply it immediately because it's important. So he taps on the notification and he opens WhatsApp and he replies to the message. In the meanwhile, the app is terminated. He decides to go back to the movies application and he was expecting to find the information about the movie still there because he hadn't saved the movie yet. And instead, he finds that all the fields are empty. This is why we haven't managed the saving the state of the application. So the application state, which needs to be saved during the suspension, is everything needed to recreate the impression that the app has never been closed. Once the app is reactivated, it's up to you to understand if it was just suspended. In that case, probably you won't do anything. Or if it was terminated, for example, because the resources of the system were low, in this case, you take care of restoring the state. Typically, the state is saved into the local storage because the local storage is persisted across usages. If you close the application, the data in the storage is still there. It's not lost. However, this approach if you have already worked with Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8, at some point you may have found this approach a bit limiting, meaning that sometime you need more time because your application is doing something, for example, is synchronizing data with a server, and you don't want that the operation is aborted because the app is suspended. At least you want that, you don't want to run forever, but at least you want that the application can complete this task. Windows 10 has added a set of APIs to allow this scenario, which are called extend execution APIs, and they give you the chance to continue running even if the application is in the ground. So you suspend the application, and the application is not suspended after a few seconds, but is able to continue running. There are two scenarios which are supported for this. And when you ask to have extended execution, you need to supply a reason. And extended execution is working with an approach which is called opportunistic, meaning that you have a minimum time guarantee, but then it's up to the operating system to decide how much time you can continue to run in the ground based on the resources. So if you are battery low, a lot of applications are asking for memory and CPU, in this case the operating system can decide. The priority is always to the running application. So the operating system can decide to terminate your application and give all the other resources to the running application. If, for example, you suspend the application and then you put away your phone and you don't use it for 1 hour, probably the operating system won't have the need to kill your application because the phone is doing nothing. There are two scenarios that are supported with extended execution. The first one is wait, meaning that when the app is suspended, I ask for more time. And then I start performing operations in the ground. This is the approach that is used, for example, when you need to complete a task. So I'm doing something like saving some data or synchronizing data with a web server. I suspend the application, but I realize that I still need some time to complete my job. In this case, I ask for more time. If the operating system grants me more time, I can keep running. And at some point, the operating system will revoke me. I will have 1 second, more or less, to clean up what I was doing, and then the app is terminated. The other scenario, that which, for example, is used when you want to do location tracking, so you want to keep tracking the location of the user, like a running application, I want to keep tracking where the user is going even if he has the phone locked in his pocket. In this case, you ask for extended execution as soon as the app starts, and then when the app is suspended, you simply keep running. You can have just one application at a time that can behave this way. Let's say a little demo of this extended execution. As you can see, this application, when it's running, in the onNavigated to event, which is triggered when the page is being loaded, I ask for a new extended execution session. I have to specify the reason, in this case it's location tracking, and I ask to the operating system the permission to run by calling the request extensions async method. If I'm allowed, it means that I can continue running the ground. What I do here is that I simply use the geolocation services to register when the user is moving across the map. And in the event handler that is raised when the user has moved, I send a toast notification. Why a toast notification? Because when the app is in background, it doesn't have access to the UI because the app is not running, nothing is visible. So the only way I have to interact with the user is with notifications. So in this case, I just send a toast notification with the coordinates, latitude and longitude of the user. I will show you the demo on the mobile emulator because we have this useful tool to simulate the location of the user. Okay, the app has started. As you can see, there's a notification at the top saying that I'm in a specific location. I suspend the application, and as you can see, notification keeps coming. This is happening because the event location changed is being triggered by the app that has been suspended. If on Windows 8.1, for example, without these extended execution APIs, what would happen is that notification weren't triggered because the app was suspended, so the location changed event wasn't executed. There's at some point, however, you will have the requirement to do something when the app is not running at all. So it's not the scenario, I'm running, I want to continue to run, but I'm not running at all, but I have to do something from time to time. Welcome, background tasks. Background tasks are the concept that the Universal Windows Platform, to be honest, it's something that was already part in 8.1, in the Windows runtime. It's the way the Windows handles the requirement to perform operations in the background. Also, in this case, the first part of the background task presentation will be the same, more or less, of 8.1, and then we will see which are the differences and the new stuff which has been added in 8.1. Background audio is basically very simple. It's a set of APIs that you can use if you need to implement background audio experiences, which means that the app needs to play music, audio, even when it's not running. And it's the basic implementation that, for example, you have on Spotify, you have on Groove Music, every application that keeps playing music even if you are not using it. You have the concept of audio stream, meaning that you can have different purposes to use this scenario, so communication, media, game, and you can have only one application at a time that is running, that is using this kind of audio stream. So if I'm using Groove Music and then I decide to start Spotify, Spotify wins over Groove Music. So the operating system gives control of the music, of the audio playback in the background to Spotify. Another set of APIs connected to the background experience is the background transfer API, and it's used when you need to perform HTTP requests, usually downloaded uploads, or even when the app is not running. And typically, these APIs are useful when you need to transfer large amount of files or data. For example, you have a new movie application and you want the user can start to download a movie. In this case, the download can be very big, and it's not the best experience that I force the user to ask him to keep the application open until the download is completed. With these APIs, you can, from the foreground application, you can start a set of downloads or uploads operations, and then when the app is suspended, the operations keep running. Of course, again, the operating system is in control, meaning that if the resources are low, the battery is low, all the transfers are suspended and resumed only when the conditions to keep the transfer alive are met. Typically, for example, when you plug your device to the power. And then there's the most interesting part, I guess, which are background tasks. Background tasks are pieces of code connected to an application that can run even when the application is not running, and they are launched across each state of the application, which means that a background task can be executed when the app is running, a background task can be executed when the app is suspending, a background task can be executed when the app is terminated, so it's not running at all. How does it work, a background task? You have your application, and you have the operating system. A background task is a different project that is part of your application. So the code of the background task isn't stored in the same application's project, but it's a different project. It's a part of the same solution, but it's a different project. And you register a background task for a trigger. A trigger is basically a condition that you want to handle with a background task. So something happens, I want a background task to run. You register this trigger, and when this trigger happens, so Windows creates a process called background task host. It's a different process than your application. And this process hosts your background task. The background task, as I said, it's a Windows runtime component. It's not your application, it's another project. And a background task is nothing else than a class which implements an interface called iBackgroundTask. This interface requires you to implement a method called run. This method is the one that is invoked when the background task is executed. So when the trigger starts, when the condition is satisfied, the run method of your application will start and will start to perform operation and executing code. The background tasks are defined in the manifest file of the application. The manifest is the file that defines all the information about the application, like the name, the capabilities, the features of the operating system it uses. And every background task is connected to a trigger. It can be connected only to just to one trigger, but if you want in your application, you can have multiple background tasks for multiple triggers. So if you need to handle different triggers, just create multiple background tasks. And this is a good solution because it's cleaner to maintain your code, because you will have different projects for every scenario you want to handle. The background task needs to specify the trigger you want to handle, and the entry point you see there is basically the full name of the class that implements the iBackground task interface. In this example, for example, is a class called Service Incomplete stored into the namespace tasks. The difference between 8.1 and 10 is that 10 has increased a lot the number of triggers that are available. So on the left you can see the triggers that were available on 8.1. On the right you see the new triggers that have been added in Windows 10. On Windows 8.1 you had a basic trigger to handle, for example, system conditions. So user is connected to internet, to handle time conditions, so run the background task every hour, push notification, location, so I want to be notified when the user is moving into a specific area. Windows 10 has added a lot more triggers connected, for example, to external devices, like Bluetooth connections, beacons, notifications for sensor data, which is movement, information about where the user is going, steps, stuff like that. Socket, so you can get notification whenever you get information from a socket channel, and so on. In addition to triggers, you have the concept of conditions. Conditions, instead you can have multiple conditions for the same background task, and it's basically a way to save resources. Basically, if a condition is not met, the background task won't run. So it's basically a way to save resources and say, for example, my background task downloads data from internet, so if there isn't an internet connection, don't trigger the task at all. If the task is running when the application is in foreground, so when this user is actively using the application, you have a set of events that you can subscribe if you want to handle what's happening. For example, if the background task is performing a syncing operation and you want to display to the user the status of the operation, you can subscribe to completed or progress and be notified, for example, when something changes, so that, for example, you can display a progress bar to the user, say, okay, we are half, the sync process is at 50%. Let me show you a simple example of a background task. As I was saying before, the background task is made by an application and a Windows runtime component. This is a Windows runtime component, and it's the, let me say, the core of the background task. As I told before, it implements the high background task interface and has a method called run. This method contains the code that is performed when the background task is executed. In this case, I just display a toast notification. And then in my main application, I have to do three things. The first one is to add a reference to the background task. So in the references, I need to do right-click, add a project, and add a references to this background task. In that manifest, I need to declare my background task. So here, for example, I have this background task, which is connected to a system event trigger. And this is the full name of my background task. So namespace dot name of the class that implements the run method. And then I have to write some code. I need to write some code because I need to register the background task in code. And when I register the background task, I need to specify the trigger I want to use and the conditions if I have. In this case, I'm registering a background task for a system trigger, and the system trigger is user present, which is a trigger that is invoked when the user is using or not using the device. So let me launch the application on the emulator so that I can show you better what does this code. I connected the application to the user present trigger, so what I'm going to show you is that when I lock or unlock the phone, the background task gets executed because the trigger is invoked. So first thing, I register the background task, and then I can suspend or close the application, no matter what. And when I try to lock the phone, which was the, okay, now I unlock it, and as you can see, there's a notification on the top. The background tasks are simple classes, so I can also place a breakpoint and, for example, redo it again, and you can see that the breakpoint is triggered, so you can debug it like the normal application. If you have a background task connected to your application, one thing that happens is that in Visual Studio you have this drop-down menu called the Lifecycle Events, which is used to simulate the different stages of the application lifecycle. It's very useful because, for example, if you remember what I told you before, termination is handled by the operating system. So you don't have a way to, the only way for you to test it would be to launch the application and stay and wait 3 hours, 4 hours, 10 hours when the operating system decides to terminate the application. Since, of course, it's not a great debugging experience, you have this button, suspend and shutdown, and the operating system will simulate the termination. The same for background tasks. There are some triggers which are not very easy to debug. If you have a timer set on 3 hours, you need to wait 3 hours for the background task to be triggered. So you have this, when you register a background task, in this drop-down menu, the name of the background task gets added, and you can simply click on it to force the execution of the background task. As you can see, now the trigger has been invoked, even if I haven't locked or unlocked the device. Background task, what about usages of resources from background tasks? If you remember, I've told you that the goal of the operating system is to give all the resources to the active application. Well, we have learned that it's not completely true. Some resources can be dedicated to other stuff, like background tasks, but the goal is, however, to keep most of the resources to the active application. So there's a set of rules to avoid that a background task can use too much memory. There are two kinds of background tasks. Some triggers are connected, like the application trigger, maintenance trigger, as connected to opportunistic. They use an opportunistic approach, which means that they can run as long as resources are available. There isn't a minimum guaranteed time, so your background task can even run for just 1 second and then gets terminated. But if there are resources, it can run also for 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 10 minutes. The default background tasks, instead, like the one connected to the time triggers or push notification triggers, they have a minimum guaranteed execution time, but no more than that. So you can't get more time than the one that is allowed. And as you can see in this table, based on the memory that is available on the device, you have a set of caps in terms of how much time, how much memory, and how much CPU a background task can use. These values, for example, are related to a 512 megabytes device. Of course, they are increased in a device that has 1 gigabyte, 2 gigabytes, or 3 gigabytes of memory. Which are some best practices that you need to apply when you work with background tasks? Well, the first one is, as you may have understood, resources are very important. So you need to define a background task to be short-lived. The operation that needs to be done by the background task needs to be as short as possible. Don't ask to a background task to decode a full HD movie. It's not an operation that is suitable for a background task. The background task is executed, even if it's executed by a different process than your application. They leave application and background task live in the same environment. So, for example, they have access to the same storage. So if you need to exchange data between the background task and the application, you can use the storage. The background task needs to be a Windows runtime component. If you try to create a background task into a normal class library, it won't work. It needs to be a Windows runtime component. And the background task doesn't have a way to interact with the UI, because it can run even when the application is not running. So if you need to talk with the user, you need to rely on notification. So you can send a toast, you can update a tile, you can't display a pop-up, for example, because the application is not running and it doesn't have control of the UI thread. Let's introduce the last part of the session, which, as we're going to see, it's connected both to the lifecycle and to the background, which is the communication between apps. Communication between apps is not something new in TEN. We had ways to handle communication between apps also in 8.1. Which are the two ways you have in 8.1? Well, the first one is URI file activation, meaning that as an application I can say I want to handle the sample app protocol, and then any other application can open my application by calling the sample app protocol. And it's more or less a web approach. So if I want to have some parameters, because I want to specify the context of the request, I use query parameters. So I add parameters to the URI, and in my application I need to get these parameters back. Another approach is to use the share contract. The share contract is a way to handle sharing of data between one application and the other. You can have application that acts as a share source, meaning that they want to share content, and you can have application that acts as a share target, meaning that they can receive content to be shared. The nice implementation of this behavior is that the operating system takes care of handling the communication between these two apps, but the source app and the target app don't have to know each other. Basically, you just say, I want my app is able to share an image, and the target application can say, I can handle images. The operating system takes care of putting the two applications in communication. However, there were some scenarios that were missing, and that they've been added in Windows 10. These scenarios are launch a specific app, which means that in the past you were able to launch another application, but it was up to the operating system, to the user, to decide which application. You didn't have a chance to say no. There are 10 apps that register the PDF protocol, but I don't want for the user to select the app, but I want to force the user to use a specific app. This is very useful in enterprise scenarios, for example, because you may want to decide that a specific feature or a specific file of your application needs to be handled by a specific app. Maybe that is provided by your own company, not by any app. Send data as send files, which is an easy way to send data back and forth for an application, and launch for result, which is one of the solvers, one of the biggest limitation of the whole approach, which is I want to launch another application, but I want also to get something back. In the past, you were able just to launch the other application, the application was able to do something, but you didn't have a way to get back something from that application. And then you have app services, which we'll see in details later. It's basically a launch for result, but with a background task. So I can ask for a background task to do some operations and get some results. The background task doesn't need to be developed by me, but it can be part of another application. So this is an example of how you can invoke a specific application. You use the launch class, which was already available in 8.1. The new feature is that now you have this target application package family name, which allows you to specify the family name of the application you want to use. In this case, the user wants to be prompted if the user has installed multiple applications that are able to handle, in this case, the Instapaper URI. He won't be prompted with a pop-up saying which app do you want to use, but that specific application will be directly opened. This is the way instead how you can send data back and forth. Also in the past you were able to send data, but it was, as I said before, more a web approach. So I attach some parameters to the URI, and the application needs to parse the URI and get this data. It's a web approach which doesn't play well, because we are talking about mobile, we are not talking about URIs. So in this case, you have this option to create a value set, which is basically a pair of T key value. So I have an object connected to a key, and I can pass it to the other application. The other application will be able, with this key, to retrieve the data I'm passing. And the same approach can be used with files. Also, with 8.1, you are able to pass files. The problem is that in 8.1, what happened is that when you passed a file to another application, the file was copied in the storage of the target application during the process. So if the file was 1 megabyte, it wasn't a problem. But if you needed to transfer a big file, basically the application was stuck until the transfer was completed. Now, instead, you have these APIs, Shared Stored Access Manager, to get a token which identifies the file. And it's up to the target application to get the token and get the file. So in this case, if the file is big, the target application has the chance, for example, to display a loading indicator until he has finished to process the file. Query URI support is a way to detect if an application is installed or not. This is another requirement for many developers, because in 8.1 what happened is that if you don't have any application that is able to handle a protocol, the user is simply asked, do you want to go to the store and search for an app? But you didn't have a way to understand what happened next. Now instead you can query first if a protocol is supported or a specific application is installed, and provide your own custom experience. So for example, you can decide that if the app is not installed, I don't want the store to ask in a generic way, let me search for an app in the store, but maybe I want to prompt the user to install my specific app. So I can create this kind of experiences now. And then you have the launch other apps for results. So you can launch another application, send some data and some files to the other application, and then get back some information. So the target application is open, the user does something, and then he gets back the data. This is done with these APIs. Instead of calling the other application with the method launch URI, you have launch URI for results. And when the target application has finished to work with the data and it's ready to give the data back, it calls a report completed method, passing as parameter the information you want to send back. Let's see a quick demo of this. I have here a sender application, which is basically the application that tries to interact with other applications, which is not working. Can close this, okay. This is the sender application, and what happens when I try to open another application and I don't have one installed, this is the experience. So I'm trying to open an application which registered let me show you here, this is the first one, which is trying to call the invoice protocol. I don't have any app registered for the invoice protocol, so this is the kind of experience. Do you want to search an app in the store? No. Let's start and install an application that is able to handle this kind of protocol. How is defined in the manifest file? If I go in the manifest file, in the declarations, I can see that the app has a protocol declaration and it registered for the invoice protocol. When the app is invoked through a protocol, it's not started through the standard on-launched event, but it started from the on-activated event. And here I have the chance to understand that the app was opened due to a protocol, and I can implement my own navigation flow. So in this case, I'm saying, in case the app is activated from a protocol, I don't want to go to the main page, but I want to go to a page that I call the protocol page, which is specific to handle this scenario. And my protocol page will simply get in the parameters the information about what happened. So in this case, I installed the application, now I call open another app. As you can see, I've opened the other application and I'm bringing with me some information. This information, in this case, are passed using the old approach, so they are part of the URL. So as you can see, I'm using this class to pass the URL and get the parameters. An improvement to this approach is to use the new value set classes. So if I go in the sender code, as you can see, a better option is to create a value set option, a value set object, add a couple of parameters, customers and price, and pass them as part of the launch unit async method. The code of the receiver will be also cleaner and easier to understand, because instead of manually parsing the URL, I simply get in the parameter a data collection, and here with the keys I can retrieve the data and display it to the user. Another thing that we can see is that the operation to open another app with results. No, I'm doing something wrong. So if I go back to the code here, you can see an example of opening another application and getting back results. So I registered a protocol called SAM, and I'm passing to the application a number, 10. Then I open the application, and when the application is opened through the protocol, is able to get this num and get this value passed from the other application. The application has a text box, so the user can input another number. I simply do the sum with the number that the other application has passed, and then I call the report completed method, passing the parameter back to the calling application. So what happens is that now, let me deploy this application on the emulator. If it's the, okay. As you can see, I've opened the other app and now the application is asking me something. So I can say file, sum. The original application is reactivated, and I get back the value that the other application has returned. In this case, I returned the number 15, and it's displaying the value. How I can achieve that? Not here, but here, as you can see, when you call the launch your results method, you can get the result, and if the result is successful, I'm able simply, like we've seen before with the value set, I'm able to get this value and do whatever I want. In this case, I'm displaying a pop-up to the user. This concept of returning data can be pushed even further with app services. So far, we have seen the model of foreground to foreground. So I have an application, I call another application, and the application can do something, return me a result, and so on. App services are a way to introduce the concept of foreground to background. So I call a background task, the background task does something and returns me some data. If you have ever used a Windows Phone device, you are using this feature without knowing, meaning that you know that, for example, the People app is able to display the latest tweets and Facebook posts from the people you have in your address book. This is done with an app service. So Twitter and Facebook applications have a background task, and when you tap, for example, on a contact on your address book and you ask to see his latest social network posts, the People app goes to the background task published by Facebook and Twitter, asks for the latest tweets and the latest posts for that user, and displays them in the People application. The difference with Windows 10 is that Windows 10 now allows this also to developers. So previously this feature was used just internally, now instead also third-party developers can take leverage of this. And there are a lot of scenarios for this. This schema summarizes how it works. You have an application which is published with a background task, and then you have other application that can use the same background task. This is a very simple scenario where you can leverage this feature. For example, you can have an application which is able to do barcode scanning, and instead of putting the logic to decode the image in the app, you put it in the background task. And this way, other application will be able to query your background task, passing the image, and getting back the decoded result. This is very useful, especially when you are working with enterprise application. Because, for example, you go to a customer which wants a set of enterprise apps, and these apps needs a centralized way to do some operations which are in common across, for example, authentication. In this case, you can have a background task that does this operation, and all the other applications are able to use it. How you call an app service? You create an app service connection. The app service connection is done as identifier. You have the name of the service and the family name of the application which hosts the background task, and you open the connection. The background task does the operation, and when it's ready to give the results back to the application, sends a message through the connection, and the application is able to receive this message. Let me show you the same demo we've seen before of the calculator, but done with an app service. So in this case, I don't have an application, but I have a background task, which is the same we've seen before when we talked about background tasks. So it's a Windows runtime component, it implements the iBackground task interface, and in the run method, I handle the fact that another application is calling me. I establish a connection, and in this connection, I'm able to request to get the values that my application is passing. So in this case, what happens is that my application is passing me a couple of numbers, 10 and 5. And I open the connection. If the connection is successful, I send a message to the background task. The background task receives the message, takes the two numbers, sum the two numbers, and send the response back to the calling application. The calling application receives the response, and it's up to the application to do what it's needed. So in this case, you can see that the experience is the same we've seen before, but we haven't launched another application, so the foreground application hasn't changed, but the sum, the operation, has been made by the background task. Of course, this is a very simple example, but every kind of logic can be demanded by a background task. In the end, there are some other scenarios in Windows 10 which are enabled by background tasks. The first one is Cortana. Cortana, it was already there in 8.1, and it was just a way to launch applications. So I can say, Cortana, send a tweet on Twitter. Cortana opens the Twitter application, and then it's the Twitter application that needs to handle the operation. Cortana instead now can work with background tasks to process a command in background. So you can say Twitter sends a tweet, the background task can ask you the text of the tweet, and it's the background task that takes care of sending the tweet for you without opening the Twitter application. This is a very simple example. The application registers a set of commands. One of these commands is not handled in foreground, but in background. So you have a background task, which is the same we've seen before, that is able to detect this command. So what happens is that, for example, here, the application asks to show some tricks, and the background task is able to pass the data to Cortana, and Cortana displays the information about the trip directly. she understood that I was talking about her, so she's jealous, don't worry. And in this case, I can display in Cortana also some information. So in this screen, no, sorry, not this. In this screen, I can display information from my own application. So I don't have to open the application to do anything. If it's something very simple and quick, I can do it without leaving the Cortana interaction. Another scenario for background task are toast notification. Toast notification in Windows 10 now can be interactive, meaning then I can add a button, a text block. In this case, when you interact with a toast notification, again, you use a background task. So, for example, Skype is able, you receive a message on Skype, you are able to reply to the message directly in the notification. When you press the send button, what happens is that the message is sent to the background task, and the background task takes care of sending the message to the receiver, to the contact that sent me the message. When you need to debug a service, there's a challenge, because most of these services are independent from the application. So the traditional experience where I press debug, I launch the application, it's not suitable, because the application can be activated by a lot of entry points. For this scenario, if you go into the properties of your project, there's an option which is called do not launch, but debug my code when it starts. This way, when you press debug, the application won't start, but the debugger will be connected and ready to detect activation of the apps. So for example, if your application is activated by Cortana, the debugger will react and will start displaying breakpoints, watches, everything you use when you debug your applications. So that's all for me. I have published the slides here. All the demos you have seen are on my GitHub repository, among others. And if you have any questions, I'll be here. I'll be at the party. I'll be tomorrow all day. Or if you have any questions that you don't have right now immediately, just send me an email and I'll be happy to answer. Thanks for your time.